Okay, now from the contemplation of a future without coercion, just thinking about it puts you in a expansive space. We traverse the centuries and take a jarring journey into the past. Prepare yourselves to be pushed into the cattle car and silenced. We are now entering a space in which only the bullies behind scenes and the managers of us, we, the cattle, are allowed to speak. Oh, wait a minute, not so jarring. This is our current reality. Keep in mind as we read that we're seeing the first full stride of these newborn power guys, hidden from even Marx's discerning eye. And let's not ignore that suppressed conversation. Why is decision-making disproportionately allocated? Quote from Karl Marx, 18th Brumaire. But under the absolute monarchy during the first revolution, under Napoleon, bureaucracy was only the means of preparing the class rule of the bourgeoisie. And by bourgeoisie, my interjection, here Plato's tribe, as we now know these guys. Continuing, under the Restoration, under Louis-Philippe, under the Parliamentary Republic, it was the instrument of the ruling class. I'm sorry, back up. Under Louis-Philippe, we'll hear the newly minted power guys. Scratch that. I'll just sort of lift that little bit of audio and stick it under Louis-Philippe, after Louis-Philippe's name. Because under Napoleon, no, this is probably a little too soon. Maybe not. Well, I think we may get the answer to that question as we read Emmanuel Wallerstein's chapter on class in his book. We'll get there shortly. Under the Restoration, under Louis-Philippe, under the Parliamentary Republic, it was the instrument of the ruling class, however much it strove for power of its own. Only under the second Bonaparte does the state seem to have made itself completely independent. Made itself. Yeah, right. Bonaparte represents a class, and the most numerous class of French society at that, the smallholding peasants. And my comment, if so, he did a damn poor job of it. Truly incompetent, unless we conclude the man was a buffoon. But history proved otherwise, as we'll also learn as we give thanks for Emmanuel Wallerstein's almost latest, second from. Rather, let us consider that this could be an example of hidden power, most definitely planning behind scenes, never revealing the intention to create scarcity. Continuing. But let there be no misunderstanding, says Karl Marx. The Bonaparte dynasty represents not the revolutionary, but the conservative peasant, the peasant who wants to consolidate his holding. But the 3 years' rigorous rule of the Parliamentary Republic had freed a part of the French peasants from the Napoleonic illusion and had revolutionized them. But the bourgeoisie violently repressed them as often as they set themselves in motion. Emphasize in your understanding of that sentence violently. Continuing, after the first revolution had transformed the peasants from semi-villains, and that means peasantry, into freeholders, Napoleon confirmed and regulated the conditions on which they could exploit undisturbed the soil of France, which had only just fallen to their lot, and slake their youthful passion for property. And I can't help but comment that that's a really patronizing thing to say, as if hunger for our earth is somehow naive or quote unquote childlike. Continuing. But what is now causing the ruin of the French peasant is his smallholding himself. Now that strikes me as a really twisted way to describe it. Continuing, the division of the land, the form of property which Napoleon consolidated in France, the form of property which Napoleon consolidated in France, that means the smallholding itself. It is precisely the material conditions which made the the feudal, and it, again, this is this abstract language is a shield, a cover for power. This is intentional. This is by plan. So it isn't the economic form, you know, as some sort of unfolding of, you know, some inevitable law did this. No, this is by planning. This happened in the same way we see the foreclosure movement did not happen by happenstance, didn't just happen. People thought it up as a conscious strategy to transfer wealth massively. This is the same deal. It's their tactic since they got seriously organized, and probably earlier than that. They borrow everything. There's no new thinking in these power guys. 2,500 years of same thinking. Isn't it time for us to move on? So anyway, it is precisely the material conditions which made the feudal peasant a small-holding peasant and Napoleon an emperor. Two generations have sufficed to produce the inevitable result. Inevitable. Inevitable given they are invisible to us. Not inevitable once we see what they are doing. The inevitable result, progressive deterioration of agriculture, progressive indebtedness of the agriculturalist. The Napoleonic form of property, which at the beginning of the 19th century was the condition for the liberation and enrichment of the French country folk, has developed, and there's that passive tone, has developed in the course of this century into the law of their enslavement and pauperization. And precisely this law is the first of the Ide Napoleonens. Oh, forget it. I couldn't say it even before all this brain swelling. Ide Napoleoniens. Napoleons, Napoleonens. An allusion to Louis Bonaparte's book. I'm sorry. De Ide Napoleon. Napoleons! Published in Paris in 1839. That was the editor's helpful explanation, which the second Bonaparte has to uphold. The economic development of smallholding property. And again, in the words economic development, let's hear instead transfers of the wealth of our common earth. The economic development of smallholding property has radically changed the relation of the peasants to the other classes of society. Under Napoleon, the fragmentation of the land in the countryside supplemented free competition, and power, I'm arguing, hides in the ideology of economic development, in the economic propaganda continuing. And the beginning of big industry in the towns. The peasant class was the ubiquitous protest against the landed aristocracy, which had just been overthrown. The roots that smallholding property struck in French soil deprived feudalism of all nutriment. Its landmarks formed the natural fortifications of the bourgeoisie against any surprise attack on the part of its old overlords. And I'm hoping, I mean, I interject too often in there, but I'm hoping that's straightforward, that what he's saying is that the objective was to, as I read in a quote from Wallerstein's book, to replace one set of rulers with another. And the argument being that there was no bitter feelings toward the aristocracy in these new guys, these new power guys, but they did not want them coming back. And so the land, their holdings, were broken up and distributed among the smallholding peasants. So those, so it was a strategy to both end the possibility of a recurrence of the power of the aristocracy. So the peasantry was used as a tool to accomplish that. Simultaneously, through debt, the tactic became then to destroy the ability of the peasantry to form any challenge to these new power guys. And so they were ruthlessly suppressed. And then who's left? It's like, in their minds, a game of musical chairs, you know. Who's left standing? They want it to be them and them and only them. Which is possible if you stay hidden, which is why we are focusing on outing them.